I do look back and say, like, what got us to this point? How do we even make it 20 years? How are we still growing? Like, I'm not kidding you, Vince. I think we'll grow 100% this year. How is that still possible, right? So you just kind of look back with a lot of gratitude, especially in the midst of worst sort of human health crisis and economic uncertainty period of my entire life, let alone the last 20 years.
Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. In this podcast, Vince Menzione, a proven industry sales and partner executive, brings together technology leaders in this forum to discuss transformational trends and to deconstruct successful strategies to thrive and survive in the rapid age of cloud transformation. And now your host, Vince Menzione.
Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. For this 64th episode of the podcast, I am excited to welcome a friend and a fan favorite, Tony Savoyan, the CEO of SADA Systems. Tony and I go back many years from our engagement at Microsoft, and I've interviewed Tony as one of my very first guests, episode 3 of the podcast, and we later did a live interview at the CRN event in Tony's home city of Los Angeles that was recorded and appeared as episode 37, Skating to Where the Puck is Going. Since we recorded that episode, Tony and his family, both his parents, Ann and Hovig, were founders of the business, sold the Microsoft portion of the business in 2018, and Tony and the team at SADA have doubled down in partnership with Google. Tony is one of the most engaging and business-minded people I know, and I respect him because he exhibits so many of the traits that I coach my clients on in what makes great partnerships. In the last year, Tony started his own podcast, Cloud and Clear, where he interviews leaders in the technology sector focused on the Google ecosystem. We'll provide links to Cloud and Clear in our show notes. Tony and I have a lot of ground to make up after a two-year hiatus, so I hope you enjoy this lively discussion. As with each of my episodes, I appreciate your support. Please tell your friends about Ultimate Guide to Partnering and where they can find us. And I'd love your feedback. Please like the podcast and provide comments or reach out to me at Vince Menzione at LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can also like and follow Ultimate Guide to Partnering on our Facebook page, or drop me a line at vincem@cloudwavepartners.com. Thank you for following along, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Tony, welcome back to the podcast, my friend.
Vince, I'm so happy you're doing this again.
I'm excited to be back. You know, I don't know if I've ever acknowledged this publicly, but you were not only an early champion when I started the podcast, you were one of the first people to suggest that I do a podcast, and you continue to cheer me on and offer great advice from day one to today, in fact. So I'm excited to have you here. I'm really excited for our discussion.
Isn't it ironic that you're the inspiration for Cloud and Clear, for what is now my podcast, going for a year?
I am really digging what you're doing. I got to tell you, you've got over 52 episodes. You're doing one a week. That's amazing.
Yeah, see how it all works around? I inspire you to do one, you do one, I see and like what you're doing, and then I just copy you later on. That's just how it works.
Inspiration. What is that expression about, on the shoulders of others or something to that effect?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you back, and quite a bit has changed from the December 2017 interview we did in LA, back in your hometown.
Yep.
Since that time, I'd love to discuss the sale of the Microsoft practice, your dad and mom's roles now, and what has changed in terms of the focus and growth of SADA Systems.
So much has changed. So much has happened. The only constant is change, my friend.
I agree. Well, I mean, as an observer watching from afar, I mean, I saw you build these great practices, right? Last time we spoke, in fact, we talked about the fact that you were able to separate these amazing practices and be partner of the year with both Google and Microsoft. And you were spinning up a Facebook practice at that time. And, you know, selling off the Microsoft practice, and it seems like you've doubled down now. And so I really am interested in discussing this pivot and your role in the Google partner ecosystem.
I think your timing is exceptional. And I'm so happy to be a guest on a podcast because I've been hosting so long. And it's not always me on Cloud and Clear. We switch it up. We have my CTO on there. We have my COO on there, and Noreen, my CMO, has done a few episodes, but it's nice to be on the other side. And the other reason your timing is really good, because SADA will turn 20 years old on August 16th. So wow. I've been getting very introspective lately.
20 years. Congratulations. That is an amazing feat, my friend.
Yeah. No, it doesn't feel that way, probably because I started so young and didn't really know what I was doing at all for many years. But it doesn't feel like 20 years because it feels like there's so much work to do ahead of us.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, the trajectory has been amazing. I know we've talked about your growth, and you were called a born in the cloud partner, but the truth of the matter is you've been around for 20 years and doing things before there was a cloud.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, we'll reference back to the old episodes we did, episode 3 and episode 37, because there's some really good discussion about the evolution of SADA. But what can you say now about, what are you introspective about specifically, and what are you seeing?
I do look back and say, like, what got us to this point? How do we even make it 20 years? How are we still growing? Like, I'm not kidding you, Vince. I think we'll grow 100% this year.
Wow.
How is that still possible, right? So you just kind of look back with a lot of gratitude, especially in the midst of worst sort of human health crisis and economic uncertainty period of my entire life, let alone the last 20 years that I've experienced. So there's a lot of gratitude laid into the introspection, but you do question sort of how you got there, and you realize there's definitely luck involved, but there's also a lot of other things that I think that are a common thread. I've written some of these in a super secret, not yet published, and I haven't talked to anybody else about it but you. So I have this manifesto. I sat down and wrote just my reflections on the last 20 years because I wanted to give a gift to every SADA employee and just to the world around the anniversary, because we're not throwing a party this year, that's for sure. So What's going to be my expression of our celebration? And it turned into, I just sat down and started writing on a Saturday, and it turned to like 14 pages.
Well, can you share some of it with us?
I'd love to. And this is sort of a Vince Manzione exclusive right here. But
I love it.
You know, I think that there's certain common threads, and I realize looking back is sort of consistently being on the right side of history and on the right side of trends, these macro trends that I think are not necessarily easy to see when someone is super successful in the trenches with some paradigm or another. You don't see the next one coming. And I think we were just fortunate enough to see those over and over again. And, you know, you have to get that right a lot, because that's the only way you have continued growth and consistency in success, is because, like, you know, you work really hard and you know what you're doing. You might catch one wave, maybe two, you know, but, you know, I think to do this for 20 years, you have to catch many of them. You have to catch a lot more than you miss.
Well, I think it's a testament to the level of commitment and the listening that you've done. Like, you've gotten close to your partners. And yeah. I think we've talked about agility before in the skating to a puck, where the puck is going episode, but you talk about, you know, making those micro investments and sort of seeing those trends and then testing the waters, right? I think that's something you've done consistently.
Yes, yes. I gave a talk on the topic at the Channel Connect event, you know, when we had live events back in the days, like 2 years ago.
Yeah, remember then.
It was on this particular topic of listening being very important. And, you know, we get very, very close to our partners for a multitude of reasons, but one of which is, you know, these huge organizations know a lot. They don't know everything and they don't always get it right, but you stay engaged with Google, Microsoft, Cisco, VMware, and not just engage in like the formal programs and the formal construct of the partnership. I'm talking about getting to know the individuals that are the, you know, the biggest thinkers, the huge roles that have the weight of the world on their shoulders. You know, how are they thinking? What are they talking about? What are the customer experiences they're talking about? And that seems to be a very good way to assimilate your own ideas over time. You know, you gather a bunch of data points, both hard data and soft data, and you kind of put it together from multitude of sources you trust, and you get to formulate a thesis. Like, our thesis for 14 years-ish has been, you know, the cloud is going to define the next massive wave of transformation. And I think the definition of cloud has shifted. But I think if I look at today, what we're doing with customers, I don't think we would have even imagined that we'd be doing these exact types of things, or the market would demand these kind of things, or that the technology would even be there. You know, so, but the general thesis has been correct for a long time. And within this general trend, we've caught on, like, all the all the investments and the pivots and the trial and error required to make sure you're building capabilities to deliver what the market wants at the right time. And I think that's a very, very hard thing to get right over the long term.
Yeah, but you've done some things like you've talked about. You know, more than any other CEO I've worked with in a partner organization, you get belly to belly with the leadership of your partners. And I do think that that intimacy means a lot. There's things that are said or maybe not shared or not said directly, but maybe indirectly. And I think you have a level of intuition, at least that's what I've seen, in terms of some of the predictions and bets you've made. And now with what we've just seen with COVID, I mean, this transformation is accelerated. I know you've talked about this. This level of acceleration is, I mean, I don't think any of us predicted it would happen as fast.
No, it's actually quite remarkable. And I did my interview for our podcast with Chris Beal, who runs a company called Connect and Sell, and it's quite transformational way to build pipeline. It's remarkable. And he has a lot of, he's hilarious, but also really smart. And they get a lot of data by virtue of, you know, running this platform that measures all sorts of anonymized statistics around sales velocity and meetings and calls and just that activity. But of course that's a cloud service, but his thesis is that, you know, cloud has actually saved the economy in this crisis.
Yeah. Would it have been like if we were 10 years ago and we had had this crisis, right? What would we have done?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, if we think it's bad now, and it's still very, very, very bad. 20% unemployment is extremely bad. A lot of organizations struggling, potentially going out of business, really, really bad, right? But what remains of the rest of the 80% is only possible because of cloud technology. First and foremost, working from home.
Yeah.
How could you work from home 10 years ago in any job?
You couldn't. I mean, you couldn't work to the same level. You'd be sending each other emails back and forth. That'd be about it.
Yeah. Emails, faxes, maybe. A lot of conference calls. Like if we think Zoom, you know, meetings and stuff and Google Meet meetings and Teams meetings, if we think that's tiring and annoying, imagine being on conference calls where you couldn't even see people's faces or expressions or share content and information or make decisions. Like, what about all the systems, you know, the business systems, applications, how would they run, you know, without people being in the, you know, server rooms and data centers? And
well, without the elasticity of the cloud, they wouldn't, right? They would have been all bogged down. I mean, we saw this with communication systems after 9/11, they just couldn't keep up.
Oh, the phone lines, everything, right? Like that was the only vehicle to communicate was the phones. And we know both the mobile networks and the hardline networks have their limits. And let's say you were, you know, 10 years ago, let's say you were a commerce-oriented company at scale because you'd already gone kind of the digital route with commerce. Unless you were Amazon, I don't think you would be able to handle the massive increase in demand if you were in business. How would you even handle the traffic or the order volume or, you know, the fulfillment requirements? Like most of applications that are serving the needs of people not only working from home but not being able to get out of the house are completely enabled by the hyperscale cloud providers. They're seeing 30x increase and like these crazy spikes that nobody could have planned for, and none of those applications would work even if they were web enabled, right?
That's right.
It's just crazy. And again, this is, I don't want to call this, this isn't luck because there's nothing good about this, but you know, working in this field, enabling the very exact specific capabilities that are being tested at the highest degree right now by this global pandemic, feels pretty fortunate to be on this side, you know, of that formula.
And you've been doing some very interesting things too. I mean, you were involved with this national response portal, right? Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, this is actually quite remarkable. It was, you know, the healthcare organization within Google Cloud, who's run by our old friend, Chris Sekulowski.
Yeah.
You know him?
Chris Well, he's a great man.
He is, Chris Sack. He's amazing and he's doing great things at Google now. We knew him for many years at Microsoft, but his team came to us and says, hey, you guys, you know how to build cloud applications and you know geolocation mapping technology. We're going to hook you up with the folks at Looker on the data analytics side so they can help you model this stuff. And we want to build, you know, the portal that has the most relevant information down to the hospital level and at the county level about not only case volume, but, you know, hospital capacity and things like that. And they wanted SADA to play the role of not only building it, but being sort of the aggregator of this anonymized data from the largest healthcare organizations, because Google didn't really want to handle that data and they'd rather have a partner do it for various reasons. So we built that thing in, I don't know, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and launched it, and it continues to evolve. And Google funded it, of course, not 100%, but, you know, significant, you know, funding. We funded the rest. It's just one of those moments where I don't want to correlate it to, you know, it's not like war, but it's like all hands on deck. Yeah. How can we help? You know, we're going through a global crisis. It's not a war, but there's a lot of things that feel like it. And so how do we come together? It's the greatest test of not only capabilities, but company culture, partnership and alliance, like our connection with Google and their connection with HCA. And like, those are very, very important things to be called upon to leverage at a time like that. And it was just, we have this amazing new healthcare lead. He's been with us for about a year, a little less than a year, maybe. Michael Ames, who led that effort with help from our product team, Patrick Scoklin and that group, and then our app dev group got in. And it was just a very, one of the earliest tests beyond just shifting work from home. Like, this is the first, like, hey, we got to help the country, help the world, all hands on deck. And yeah, nationalresponseportal.com. It's a great partnership with two or three of the largest healthcare organizations in the US as well.
We'll have a link to the National Response Portal on our show notes. And I was on it today. In fact, it's kind of eerie to see some of the results and state by state, but
not great.
We're recording this in late July of 2020. So, you know, we're still right in the middle of this thing. I'm in South Carolina, so I'm in a hot spot. I was planning on being back in Florida and not quite. I'm not going there right now. So,
even California was early to lock down. LA County is, you know, this desire, whether it's a human desire or a business desire to open back up, has, I think, proven to be risky. So we're essentially shutting back down. And I think that's sort of an important takeaway. And we were on with one of our strategic clients. I won't name them, but, you know, they have some very interesting data around, you know, human activity around parties, let's say. Let's just call it that. Mm. And with people from the Google Office of the CTO and some other folks just talking about their strategy and how they're going to go through this. And here's the reality, Vince. There is no going back to normal, whatever normal was. B, going back to like regular in-person things being the primary way of doing business or anything like that is at least 18 months away. Yep. So I think for the audience, and this is a kind of a stark reality for any leader of a company, like even SADA is not very big, but offices everywhere and growing, is like, look, there's no like, hey, let's just pause on whatever we think, you know, is going on. Let's plan to come back to work and then we'll get serious about X, Y, and Z. There is no back.
No, working from home is the new normal.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe we'll go back to offices sometime in the future in some way. But by that point, so much of consumer behavior will have shifted forever. We're seeing this in healthcare. We're seeing it in retail. We're seeing it in media and entertainment, so many other verticals. There's just, you know, telemedicine is going to be the new normal. That's it. 80% of visits will not be in person for whatever you have.
Well, and telemedicine was so slow to take off, right? So it was about 5% uptick over the last several years. And now all of a sudden it just spiked. As you said, it's 80% now.
The technology was there. I mean, what my wife refused to use Instacart was like, I have to go and smell the berries in the market because, you know, I want to pick my own watermelons or whatever, right? And that's, you know, there's...
I love it.
There's a beautiful, you know, romance related to that. But like, she started using it because she had to. And she's like, oh my God, why would I ever go to the market? I'm like, I don't know. I've been telling you that for years. So the technology that's been there there's been resistance to it. And I think if you just extrapolate those two examples, think of the hundreds of companies that are in trouble now. They knew what digital transformation was. They knew that the technology was becoming available and affordable. Yet they delayed really aggressive transformation for all sorts of reasons. I'm talking about the traditional enterprise, not the digital natives who are right now eating their lunch. I'm talking about the traditional, well-established companies with huge market caps and thousands of employees. They had access to all the same stuff that everybody else did, technology-wise. That was
Think about Macy's and Bloomingdale's and Nordstrom's and all the others, right? I mean,
manufacturing, automotive, anything. You know, it's like they knew what it was. And actually kind of like, you know, I don't know if you remember, but pre-COVID, people were making fun of digital transformation as if it's like, you know, a bunch of BS. Digital transformation. Ah, that's cute. That's not for us. We're a serious company, you know?
Yeah.
We're going to take a long time and we're going to take our time and it's very hard to do and we don't want to, you know, make any waves. It's like, guess what? There's no better compression algorithm. The world's never, you know, never seen like COVID-19 to mobilize around this thing that was.
Right? I mean, it's,
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Google relationship, right? So, you know, again, we're fast forwarded from the December 2017 interview and you kind of, you bifurcated your business at that point. And now it's like you've doubled down. So can you tell us a little bit more about what that relationship looks like? And congratulations, you've won Partner of the Year two consecutive years.
Yeah. Global Award. Very proud of the list of global partners. There's six. And it's like SADA, then there's like Deloitte, Accenture, Atos, Palo Alto, Dropbox. You know, it's like a very, one of those companies does not look like the others, Vince.
Yeah, it's an elite group. And you don't look like any of those other companies.
So super proud of that. Punching above our weight class as usual.
Yep.
But the relationship is, look, we went down the path of this divestiture because, you know, M&A takes a long time.
Yes.
We were planning it way before. We were down the path. We were in market during the Diane Greene era. Whatever Diane Greene started to do, we saw enough confidence in to say, look, you know, we're being pulled up market faster on the Google side than the Microsoft side. We're more, in relative terms, important on the Google side than the Microsoft side. They're both great award-winning businesses. We have to focus on one. We're self-funded. We're small. Like, if we're trying to make a massive impact, we just have to focus. And the decision was made to sell the one that was easier to sell, frankly, and a little bit smaller, but in a well-established market of M&A. There's lots of Microsoft deals all year round, right? That's what we did. And then like towards the end, Thomas Kurian comes in and then Rob Enslin comes in and we're like, holy cow. Like if we thought whatever Diane Greene was doing was impressive, wait until these leaders and then Kirsten Kliphouse and then Janet Kennedy and then, you know, so on around the world. It was like, wow. And then they started to report the cloud revenues, you know, during their earnings report separately. And we saw the numbers and we're like, this seems like, again, one of those like being on the right side of history / genius moves. But we didn't have any insight that, you know, regime change was coming or that someone like Thomas Kurian would be taking over. And ever since then, you know, he's also pulled in people like Javier Soltero to run G Suite. And it seemed like definitely betting on the right horse for us based on our DNA. And the results have been quite remarkable, but it's kudos to, you know, what the global channel organization has been able to accomplish with Carolee Gerhardt and what the field partner organizations have been able to do on the ground and embrace and understand SADA.
It's, you know, the engineering resources, the technology was always there. It seems like now the investment's been in the go-to-market and the enterprise and the partnership strategies, right? They're bringing in the senior talent that you suggest. And and they're continuing to evolve their technology. It's a very exciting time.
The technology has been superior in some areas for a long time. It doesn't mean that the enterprise is ready to buy. I mean, you know, you've been around a long time. The history of enterprise software is that the best technology often loses.
That's right.
It's the other things, you know.
I think back to the Geoffrey Moore crossing the chasm analogy, right? Some of the best technologies at the early adopter stage. Yeah, some of it doesn't cross over.
That's right. So I think it's an extremely interesting time because of the massive surge in demand for cloud. And there's two reasons organizations need to adopt now and more quickly than ever. One is they need to experience significant and massive and dramatic cost savings. And if you need to do that, the pathway is through cloud one way or another. The other side of it is they need huge, massive, rapid digital transformation. And the pathway for that is also through cloud. So either way, you're going through cloud and now as opposed to 5 years from now. So that coupled with Google's enterprise class execution ability at the customer level, which was a gap up until a couple years ago, it's a really good time. And look, Amazon and Microsoft are doing great as well. This market is so big. And, you know, I have tons of admiration for Satya Nadella, particularly on a personal level. Like, I'm just a fan.
Yeah, I am as well.
The market is so big, Vince, that it almost doesn't matter who's number one, number two, number three. For a very long, it just doesn't matter. For SADA, it doesn't matter. And for customers, actually, choice is great. And diversity is great. And options are wonderful. And, you know, and they will win. Customers will win.
Yeah, I agree. And there's a heterogeneous nature to this ecosystem. And as you said, it's not a winner-take-all game, right? There's enough business out there for all three.
Not at all.
So what about customers choosing Google? And why should an organization choose Google as a partner today?
I think there's certain verticals that AWS has completely, you know, made upset. So there's
just, can't imagine any of them in particular.
That's one really, really good reason. But there's others. I think there's commercial reasons. There are technology reasons. There are partnership reasons. Certainly, Google is not going to compete with you, you know, on any level. That's not the case with AWS. And it is absolutely the case, I feel. And look, lots of love for Microsoft, of course, and Amazon, and they're both very good at what they do. Nobody has the network and the capabilities on the data center side that Google does. It's just a fact. Nobody can do the things that Google can do from a performance standpoint at the price point that they can do it at. That's sort of the today competitive advantage. If you care about the technology that much, and we have many digital natives who are like completely driven by the decisions that their engineering org is making. There's no political agenda. There's no, you know, what's our relationship with Microsoft? No, it's like, what do the geeks want? And if you ask the nerds, as Miles Ward, my CTO, would call them, they will choose Google almost 100% of the time because the technology is better. It's just better.
That's what
the nerds would say. And it's true. Like Mad Hive, we published that story. That they're one of the smartest groups of engineers you'll ever find anywhere. Many of them come from AWS. They're building something completely transformational and revolutionary in ad tech, putting an immense amount of pressure on the platform that they run on. There's no other cloud that could do what MadHive's trying to do at those performance requirements. It's just a fact. So the enterprise will see some of that and will want that for those reasons. But the other really smart sort of enterprise strategy that Kurian and Rob and the rest of the team are deploying, and Urs on the engineering side, is like, look, they know they're third right now. They also know that hybrid and multi-cloud as a paradigm will be around maybe forever. So what do? You build Anthos, which basically says, I feel like I have the best cloud, but you know what? If you deploy Anthos, you can run your applications across all the clouds and your own cloud. And I think you'll move workloads to GCP over time. But if you don't, it's fine. But Anthos is the best plane of glass, the best operating system in a containerized world, period. And I think that's a very confident posture, and technologically and engineering-wise, extremely difficult to build and achieve. Anthos is a phenomenal strategy, and it's a very pro-customer strategy. And I think that's another reason traditional conservative organizations will choose Google, because, like, you know, Azure Stack's not going to do that. And what's the Amazon version? Outpost? Outpost's not going to do that.
Agreed. It's amazing. Yeah. What about being a Google partner? What would you say to organizations that want to consider partnering with Google?
That's the other thing. So let's step back and, you know, understand who Thomas Kurian and Rob Enslin are, and Cliphouse from Microsoft and others. Like, what they're deploying is a very well-established enterprise software playbook. I met Thomas Kurian very early on. 3 months before the sale was going to be closed, I told him that we're divesting the Microsoft business. Super risky move, but I had like 15 minutes with him, and he's like, look, all the stuff of how to do this right is well established. Like, Google doesn't have to invent new rules about how to go to market with enterprise software. He comes from Oracle. Like, Oracle wrote the book 40 years ago. It hasn't changed that much from a go-to-market standpoint, right? So one of the things and core tenets that Cisco, VMware, Microsoft, Oracle, SAP have all understood for a very long time is that to win in the enterprise, you need a healthy, profitable clearly defined partner program and channel strategy. And so that's really like the massive shift that we've seen. And we've partnered with Google for 14 years under 8 different partnership regimes in like 20 different models, right? And what we see now is a very clear strategy that says, not only are we, you know, channel neutral, but pro-channel. Partners aren't an afterthought. They're with us in the trenches at every customer. And so obviously that puts a tremendous amount of expectations and demands on our teams to continue to develop the capabilities and the skills, whether it's on the sales side or the delivery side, really the entire life cycle, right? Technical account management, customer success, enterprise support, client partner, all the parts have to be firing on all cylinders because enterprise expectations are very high. But it really makes us feel like we are just an extension of the go-to-market field organization. Like SADA is just an extension of Kristen Kliphaus' organization, or Janet Kennedy's more specifically, because we really focus on US and Canada. We're just an extension.
Yeah,
we're one of them. And that
that's
is
the way it should be.
That's the way it should be. That's panacea. Very hard to do.
Very hard to do.
Obviously, there's, you know, issues, because as you grow and change, like there's always issues. But if that's your going in philosophy and your mentality as a vendor, you are going to build a very healthy channel organization.
That's great to hear.
Healthy set of partners.
So if you don't mind, I'd like to pivot a little bit and focus in on your organization and how it's grown. I've seen 2 new board seats. I wouldn't mind if you spent a few moments talking to us about your 2 new board members. And I know you're a huge proponent and have been on diversity and diversity initiatives.
Yes.
And I'd love to hear your vision and where you hope to take this organization.
A lot there to unpack, but I'll try to take it piece by piece. So part of my manifesto describes sort of after 20 years, what keeps us going or what keeps me going, right? As a CEO, for example, what keeps the family engaged in this company? It's been family owned for this whole period of time. And basically what we see just sort of on the pure opportunity side, Vince, is this is one of the few markets ever in the history of time that will have an unlimited demand for the products and services that we bring to market for the foreseeable future, 5 to 10 years, virtually unlimited demand. The demand for public cloud exceeds the supply of every provider on planet Earth, and every partner and every engineer. Add them all together, there's more demand than supply. Crazy.
It's astounding when you say that, by the way. I sit back and go, you know, you're absolutely right, but it's astounding.
Yeah, but it's crazy. It's like unbelievable that a market like that exists. But yes, there's unlimited demand, and I don't see that changing. So on the mission side, though, which is what really drives us, is we feel duty bound, especially in the midst of what's going on today. But really, for the next 5 to 10 years, like our customers need us. Not only the 2,400 existing customers we have, I'm talking about the market needs us and Google Cloud to help them transform and pivot, to have a positive impact on job creation, on revenue, on profitability, on, you know, GDP impact. How about that? Like, that's the opportunity. And we're in a tremendous position to deliver that.
That's a bold vision. I mean, that's a bold statement on your behalf.
It's true. You know, if we go and help, let's say Papa John's, we have a podcast coming out soon. Like, we're helping them completely transform the delivery experience, you know, like, pizza is like been the de facto delivered food. Like, and you know, when you say pizza, the next word that comes to your mind is party. Like, it's the food that's brought us together as Americans for, you know, generations, right?
And it's always been the easiest to deliver.
Yeah. And so like, they're not just our customer, we're their partner in their success. And you could just multiply that by, you know, the customers we have. We look at a Mad Hive, you know, who's completely transforming over the air, sort of ad tech, removing fraud, removing inefficiencies. There's like $1 trillion of fraud in that traditional business, you know, year over year. And when they make a $50 million commitment to GCP through SADA, you know, that's going to be their biggest financial commitment they ever make as a company. It's maybe more than their payroll. When I look at that and understand it or appreciate the level of responsibility I feel as the CEO of SADA, when they sign something like that, it is tremendous. So we are going to continue to grow because the market demands it, but we have to do it with a bunch of things done right. And a lot of it has to do in the last 18 months have been defined not only by the Microsoft divestiture, but an implementation of a new ERP platform, NetSuite, which is amazing, which we're also using for CRM, by the way. And now ServiceNow and a bunch of other things. We have, you know, 4+ people working full time on internal business system stuff because we know we need the data infrastructure to scale, right?
Yeah, smart move.
We also need executives. So half of our executives are new, meaning they came in the last 4 years. The other half are, including me, have been around for a long time. It's a great combination. But beyond the executive team is we also need a fully functional board that has independent outside members that can hold myself and the executive team accountable and be there to guide, to run these committees, whether it's, you know, audit or comp or govs and norms. You know, like, we're smart enough to know that we haven't, every year SADA is a company that I haven't run before as far as like a company of this size and complexity. So how do you surround yourself as a CEO with the right people with enough diversity and varying points of view to make sure that we don't miss the next opportunity or make sure that we don't get too complacent or we don't make any big mistakes? I think it's the only way to do it is layering these points that are like absolute enterprise class, trying to do it while you're still small-ish, meaning, you know, sub 300 people, but really setting the foundation, both like the financial data infrastructure. We've also hired PwC for tax and audit, for example, bringing in a board so that you feel prepared for anything.
So you're setting yourself up for the future. And, you know, hiring is so hard as well. How do you ensure that you, when you're that size organization, every resource counts, right?
Yes.
How do you ensure you're getting all the right people and getting the right people in seats?
What's interesting is that it's actually never been easier in the history of SADA to attract the best talent. And I think it's a factor of, you know, being in an exciting market, working with Google Cloud. A lot of people just want to be in that orbit for very understandable reasons. Mm-hmm. But then bringing on a couple of folks like my CTO, Miles Ward, from Google, which was a monster hire, is, you know what? Other engineers want to be in that orbit, Vince. And I think, and now we're adding a, you know, a bunch more heavy hitters that are just well-known geniuses in their own right. And I think that helps. But you know what I've also learned? So we insource all of our recruitment efforts, essentially. We have a 4-person team, talent acquisition team, reports to people ops under Orkita, and they just do a phenomenal job in the people experience in the recruitment, negotiation, hiring, onboarding phase. They just do such a good job there. And it's the beginning of the people experience cycle for people that join SADA. But the other part, Vince, that we spend a tremendous amount of time on, and the people experience is the part that we have to win at the most and first, so we can win the customer experience execution. And then we can also be a great partner to Google, which comes third, because if you don't get the customer experience right, Google doesn't care about you, right? We have to get that right. I spend a lot of my time thinking about not only how do you attract the best talent and get them to come to SADA, but how do you make sure that that first week, first quarter, first half, first year, first 5 years, and to their very last day is an exceptional experience? How do you make sure that they have, for the people who've been here a long time, the right training on management skills, on people skills, on their certification, so that they feel like they're up-leveling themselves while they work here? And some of it is on the technical track. The other is on the management leadership track. That experience is super important, because unless we are like the best place to work, we cannot translate that into world-class customer experiences. I've known that for a long time. And now we're finally in a position that we're mature enough and wise enough and also can afford the level of investment required to achieve exceptional people experience. And then, you know, word gets around. I mean, birds of a feather flock together. I think we hired 72 people in H1. Half of them were referrals. We have 16 people starting in the next 20 days. We paused hiring for a minute because of COVID-19, but now we're like, oh my God, we're actually under-resourced.
That's amazing.
We have to continue to win in the people experience part and not only be the place that people want to work, but when they get here, their experience is better than they expected.
And how do you ensure that?
a lot of it is the functions and the duties of the people organization. So not only onboarding, but ongoing education programs like the ones they run, especially in the midst of COVID. There's a lot of, you know, some fun, some serious. There's a slew of programs that they run around inclusive communication, stress management, those types of things, right? They really stepped up during COVID-19. Our employee net promoter score has never been higher than it is now, which is remarkable. But the other part is, at the end of the day, you have to have really exceptional managers at every level. So last year, we started to invest in a platform called Torch.io, and I got that as sort of a recommendation from someone I trust. See, Twitter has its value, you know? I got this recommendation from someone I follow and trust on Twitter, and it's been like the best management training program for people that, a lot of people at Sada that have been here for 5, 10 years, they didn't start off as managers. They never got management training, but now they run a team of 5, 10, 20, 30 people. Being a great manager is an art and a science. And those skills don't automatically get developed unless you're deliberate about doing that at your company. And I think we don't want to be the place where people love the company but hate their manager.
No. And you know, your Glassdoor scores, I mean, it shows, right? What you've been doing with the organization. I mean, it's, as you said, your net promoter scores for your internals.
Yeah, we have that. That's public, of course. And then we have an internal one that's our, you know, monthly survey. And I think we're sitting at like a 68 right now, which is quite good.
That's high. That's great.
Yeah, it's important. You have to measure it. You have to care about it. People generally, you know, Vince, you've been around a long time. People leave managers. They rarely leave companies.
That's
right.
They
leave managers.
They leave managers for sure. Absolutely. So that, well, you're building a world-class organization. So I commend you. I'm going to shift gears here a bit, Tony.
Sure.
As you know, I study and coach on great partnerships, and I've gotten to observe you up close and personal. But I'm going to ask you this. What do you think, what characteristics do you believe make a great partnership?
You mean on a partner side or on the vendor side?
From both sides.
It's a really good, great question. And it's hard to get right. It's very hard to get right. I think there's a bunch of expectations that I'll just start with ourselves first. I think that it's helped when we choose a partner to be all in with that partner. I think even when we had the Microsoft business, you knew there was a clear division of different sellers and delivery folks that ran those businesses. If you want to be taken seriously by, you know, whoever, Cisco, VMware, Microsoft, you know, you name it, whoever, Google, they want to know that you're bought into the standpoint of like you're making a bet and it's clear. Like these folks within this company own the success of this strategy, and they're going to live and die and hit their bonuses or not hit their bonuses based on how well we do in this Google partnership. Now, it's rare to have a whole company like that, which is Sada with Google, but that's not the norm. So if you want to start a new partnership, literally carve out a few folks who are passionate about what you're trying to do and make that their only job.
Yeah. Dedicate the resources, make the commitment.
Yeah, totally.
I think one of the things I saw personally with your relationship up close and personal was the level of commitment at the CEO level and then up and down your organization. To me, that was something that was palpable.
Yeah. No, I think those things should match. They have to match. You can't have just a exuberant CEO with no execution ability or a bunch of folks that are excited with no support from the CEO. Like neither one of those works very well. So I think that's important. Obviously, it goes without saying, like, figure out where the value chain is that the partner expects you to contribute at and really drill on that. And it's different. It depends on the maturity of the ecosystem, what the vendor expects. We, at this point, in our size and our maturity and our all-in-ness with Google, like the entire value chain is important that we have to execute on and we get measured on. So we have to be really good at sourcing business, really good at sales execution, really good at that first POC, very good at the next big project, and with customer success and renewals and cross sells and the lifetime value, growing that customer, right?
Yeah. Maniacal focus, I refer to it as, right? So you're focused in on that, the success of that customer.
100% aligned with that customer. And cloud economics actually encourage that very clearly. Like if you don't do that well, you don't get cloud.
It's amazing.
And on the vendor side, there's some very basic fundamental things like what Google has done. Make the channel leadership roll up into the sales leadership on the ground, you know, make us feel like an extension of the field. Make sure things like comp neutrality, are taken care of. So your sellers don't care how it transacts. And then it's up to the partners then to demonstrate value and to make the case region by region, sales pod by sales pod, what value you bring to the table. And again, different markets might behave differently within the same, you know, vendor ecosystem. So what they need from us in the Bay Area, Vince, I'll tell you, is very different than what they need from us in Chicago. It's just different. And we have to be prepared to deliver what they need that differs market for market and just really focus in on that. And programs are important. Incentives are important. Those are table stakes. But if you're the vendor, you need to measure and reward the partner on whatever you think you need them to do. So if you need them to drive pipeline, you have to pay them to drive pipeline, meaning have incentives, right, that align with that. If you need them to do a bunch of POCs, find a funding mechanism for that that they can apply for, either in a bucket form or a per project form. You remember Azure, Go Fast, and Fast Track, and all these other things.
All those programs, Pi, there were
a few. Yeah, there's too many, actually, right? That would be my criticism. Too many programs that are too much to do administratively. And for the vendors, and you know, Google knows this, I make my case very clear, and other ecosystems have done this for a long time, is the tiering has to make sense. You know, you can't treat all partners the same. You can't just have, you have two concurrent needs as a vendor. You need to develop a relatively big, but the right size for you, healthy global partner ecosystem of a bunch of capable partners. But when the sort of cream starts to rise to the top and you were like, well, these three partners here in Mexico are doing, you know, 10 times better than everyone else. And then this one in Europe and you know, these two in North America, like their needs are going to be different. They don't need you to like make sure that they get certified in engineering, you know, tests, or you don't have to make sure that they know how to do rudimentary things that other partners are just learning. I think having partners programs that grow with the ambitions of your most dedicated partners is also very important. And it's hard to get that right.
Some great insights. Thank you. I want to shift again. We're getting towards the end of our discussion, which I wish I could stay on for hours with you today. But as you know, I'm fascinated with the personal side as well. And we've discussed your family's immigration to the United States from Soviet Armenia in previous episode, and your beautiful family and the importance of family to you. Your parents have clearly instilled some values that have had a profound impact on your career. And I thought maybe we'd discuss that a little bit. What did you take from your experience growing up that you've applied to your business success?
Oh boy, such a important question. And I think it has a lot to do with, you know, the focus and the attention and the demonstrative hard work, you know, of my parents to set me up for an easier road than they had. And just seeing that, whether it's like they left everything in their 30s to start over again, to how hard they worked to learn a language, get their first job, and, you know, not be reliant on, you know, government programs and things like that. They just wanted to prove that the American dream was real and they could execute on it. And then making sure that I always, you know, was school focused, didn't have to, you know, work. They didn't make me work if I was like really getting good grades and stuff like that. Like that emphasis of just setting me up, knowing that we were quote unquote coming from behind, you know, underdogs in a lot of ways. And then my father just always having technology around the house made me fall in love with technology early on, way before most people got their hands on their first computer or, you know, laser printer or their, you know, networking equipment or whatever. We had it around the house. I fell in love with the capabilities of what technology could do in terms of changing the way people work or study or learn. And then, you know, I think at the end of the day, it was sort of like they were always focused on the outcomes beyond themselves. They were always that way with their friends and their family. They always gave first. They gave the most. They were, I think, very successful and very admired and loved as a result of that. That wasn't why they did it. They just went everything. They were all in with everything that they were in too. And I think everyone felt that around them, whether it was their work or their family relationships or their kids or whatever, right? So, and I saw that not just in my parents, but my extended family. That was just part of our family culture. And I think just applying that, the good parts of that mindset, like I personally really care about the success of all 240 something people at SADA and growing. I want, not that they're my children, but it's almost like, oh my God, you've bet your career on SADA. I have to make you wildly successful. How do I do that?
It sounds like an extended family, and the role models that your parents were for you that you've extended into the organization, or they've extended into the organization and you continued on to extend.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, this general, again, the manifesto will go more deeply into this 14 pages worth, but you know, the reason we're doing what we're doing now is above and beyond the needs of the family. The family doesn't need more. Like the Sofonis don't need more. We think the world needs more though. And we think we're in a tremendous position to give more. So how do we create more, a better economic outcome for the people that work at SADA? How do we change the lives of every decision maker at every customer that chooses to work with SADA and with Google Cloud? How do we help them transform, especially in the midst of the biggest crisis that they've ever faced? Like, we're in a position to do that. So I think we should. And it even goes back to one of the first influential books in my life, which was Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And he has a sphere of influence concept that is the only chapter I remember. Vince, I swear. It's the one that says, like, we are responsible for whatever is in our sphere of influence. Some people have a small sphere of influence, and like Bill Gates has a very big one. So why is Bill Gates trying to create, you know, new nuclear energy sources or cure the sanitation problems in developing, like, he is because he can, you know? And like, and I feel like we have a much smaller version of that, which is like, we can still impact, you know, thousands of companies to be better at what they do, and the people that within them, that work within them, to have more capabilities than they do today. So then, therefore, we should. Because we can, we should. And I think that also kind of can be traced back to my upbringing, as I saw what my parents took on all the time. They always took on the responsibility. They always raised their hand. They always were first to help. I think that stems from that upbringing as well.
Well, it sounds like your sphere of influence is growing as your company is growing and as you bring on more talent and build your culture.
Feels like it.
So Tony, you've been great to have back. I just enjoy our conversation. I wish we could be in person today in LA, but we're doing this across country. Recording this July of 2020. And I just wanted to ask you for last remarks, any closing advice to our listeners on leading during these uncertain times?
These times are the biggest test of your company culture and you as a leader. The way we behave, the way we show up, the way the decisions we make, the way we act will resonate for years, good or bad or neutral. So, and then don't think you're going to wait for this thing to go back to quote unquote normal. There is no going back. It's going to look completely different. And we don't even know when things will stabilize. So act fast, act with conviction, be a role model to yourself, be someone that you would look at yourself from the outside and be like, I want to be like that person, be that person. And, you know, I think your family, your customers, your teammates, your employees, they will appreciate that and remember that for many years to come.
That is excellent advice. Thank you so much, Tony. It has been great to have you back. I am hoping someday in the future we'll get to do one of these on stage again, because I know we're not going to go back to normal anytime soon, but someday soon.
Someday soon.
Someday. But it won't be the same. As you said, the new normal is we're not going to go back to exactly the same. We're in different times. Tony, thank you again for joining me. Thank you for joining our listeners, and appreciate your friendship.
Vincent, I'm so happy you're back doing this. Let me tell you, I'm so excited for you and happy to be a contributor, but I'll also be a listener. And thank you for the opportunity to help relaunch this very valuable voice in the ecosystem. And I do really hope we get to see each other in person someday soon.
Thank you, Tony.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Minzione, online at ultimateguidetopartnering.com and facebook.com/ultimateguidetopartnering. We'll catch you next time on The Ultimate Guide to Partnering.